Please be advised, this episode has not been edited for your comfort.
Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
Everybody and welcome. As you've already heard, this is episode number 150. It's our, and here's that big word again, sesquicentennial episode. And I'm your host, woo-hoo, Russ, K5TUX, and that noise was Pete, VE2XPL. How are you doing tonight,
G'day.
Pete? G'day.
I'm doing awesome. I just twisted my mic so it would be closer to my head so that you guys could hear me better, and now I'm eating it.
How does it taste?
Pretty bad.
Yeah. Pretty bad.
You probably don't want that answer.
Let that be a lesson. Never do last minute adjustments during the theme song.
Well, that's okay. As long as you're muted when you do it and then unmute when necessary, which seems to be problem for you.
It's like I put my headset back on. The mic's like literally in my mouth. All right. Happy 150th, y'all.
Yep. Happy 150. And we also have Cheryl, who's sitting across from me. So say hello to the folks.
Hello, folks.
Hello, folks. We had some mic problems. We had some audio problems. We have all kinds of problems. And
Cuss on this one.
We cuss on all of them. I'm just not going to
edit it out.
Right. Yeah. I'm not going to edit it this time. So
carry on.
Since I didn't do most of the work for these initial stories, we're going to let our other co-hosts deal with those. And I'm not even sure how you're going to read this first one. So
yeah, well, I found this and I thought it was cool, but yeah. So Pete can do it.
No problem.
All right, Pete, fumble your way through this one. There you go.
I've actually read the show notes, so I know what I'm talking about today. Ham Radio Now, we're talking about Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, now Silent Key. So recently, Gary Pierce, KN4AQ, and a certain guest remembered Bill Pasternak, passed away this past June 11th. We mentioned that in the last episode, a little bit of sad news. After we had said in previous episodes that he was doing much better, the next day I opened Facebook and find out that he dies. I'm like, I feel like an idiot now. But anyways, that's the way it goes sometimes. So what he writes on YouTube, he writes, but I'm guessing there's also a video to go with it. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, passed away a few weeks ago. He left behind a huge number of friends. So he found six of them. It's an alarm in the background. Maybe my car is being stolen. Anyways, he found six of them to join him in remembering, telling stories, and celebrating his life. So this is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, who's saying, said it was therapy for the soul. Sorry. So each is in the ham radio news business in one way or another, some part of Newsline, some not. But before we finish, he says, we talk about the state of news and media in ham radio. In this specific episode are Don, who's a Newsline anchor and Ham Nation host. CQ editor Rich Moseson, I believe is how you pronounce that. Or is it Moseson? His call sign is W2VU. Newsline anchor producer Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, which I love the call sign because his name is Nash and he's got Ash in his call sign. And he says that's in his secret identity mode. And last but not least are Jim Davis, who's a Newsline anchor, W2JKD, and Ham Nation host Amanda Alden, K1DDN. And there's a special appearance by Newsline co-founder Jim Hendershot, WA6VQP. So Skeeter and Don discuss plans to keep Newsline going, which is really good news, and they guarantee that the young ham...
Would you like me to finish that?
Oh, yeah, he's really gone. Pete went away. Anyway, Skeeter and Don discuss plans to keep Newsline going, and they guarantee that the Young Ham of the Year Award will be presented at the Huntsville Ham Fest this August. And they need your help with nominations and contributions. At www.arnewsline.org/YHOTY, which is Young Ham of the Year.
Yeah, I don't know what just happened there. Apologies. I just got flushed.
Well, you also, while you're at it, need to move the mic like to the side of your mouth because it's like you're blowing into it. All we hear is...
You should have told me that before I started the story when I was fucking around.
Sorry. We're trying to keep your levels up, but it's your oxytocin levels we need to keep up, not your.
Okay, so how's this? Is this better?
Better.
It does seem
Peter
to be better.
Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers.
Yes, that does seem better. All right, so let me go ahead and just finish off here.
Oh, great! I've lost connection with the Etherpad now too.
Oh, wonderful!
Yeah, you finished.
Okay, it's back.
I'll just go ahead and finish this. And for quick memory jolt, take a look at this clip from 1976. Ooh. I was just barely alive in 1976. The link to that will be in the show notes. And if you're an old-time L.A. ham, which none of us are, you might wind back to the beginning and see some friends. So you can watch the Ham Radio Now episode 209, which is a goodbye and a fond farewell to Bill Pasternak, Whiskey Alpha 6, India Tango Foxtrot, Silent Key. So go ahead and check that out.
Check out that clip?
I have not checked out that clip.
I did, and it's pretty cool. Just first of all, seeing a clip that was filmed in 1976, on film, of course, is pretty cool. But Bill Pasternak, I mean, you totally recognize him. He looks like the same guy, just, you know, 50 years younger. And it's just interesting to see clips from way back when, as it were.
40 years younger, perhaps?
Perhaps.
I'm sitting here counting my fingers going, whoa.
Well, I figured by the time you edit this episode.
He might be 50 years younger.
Well,
that's
true. Yeah.
Anyhow, yeah, sorry. My math is a little off today, perhaps.
That's okay. All right, anyway, so the links to those things will be in the show notes. Help out with the Young Ham of the Year Award if you feel so inclined. And we'll say another goodbye to Bill. It's too bad, but I'm glad that Amateur Radio Newsline will continue and his legacy will move on. So we also have a story about the International Space Station, which is kind of interesting. I haven't checked this out yet, but it sounds cool.
Perhaps
so.
You should, because, yeah, it is actually pretty cool. However, before when I checked out the link, it wasn't working, but now it is. So,
all right, good.
That was,
so tell us about the link, Pete.
What was happening. Anyways.
Before your link craps out again. Come on, tell us.
The link is awesome. Panoramic tour of the ISS. For those who don't know, that's the International Space Station. So ESA astronaut Samantha Cristoforetti, I don't know how you pronounce that. I have no idea.
Probably Cristoforetti.
Cristoforetti
with a nice Italian lint to it. Cristoforetti.
Ah, there you go.
Samantha Cristoforetti. I'd get there someday.
Her call sign is IZ0UDF, has been cataloging her home of 6 months to create panoramic images you can rotate and explore. Each section of the space station required around 14 fisheye photos stitched together. Areas of interest can be clicked on for more information in another browser window. Eventually, the entire station will be available to explore right here on this page. So you can follow us, and by us, they mean them, to receive updates. Or maybe that's us. You can follow us, too. So there's a tiny URL for this website that's really, really long, but basically it's on the ESA.int website, and you could go find links in there or check the tiny URL on our in our show notes. And you can find the Ham TV, can you find the Ham TV transmitter on the floor? So there's your quiz for the day. So whoever can find the Ham TV transmitter on the floor and email us that answer will win our everlasting gratitude and some congratulations on air.
No, none of that is actually true.
Oh, come on. I'll be gratitudeful.
Gratitudeful. Nice.
Yep.
I do want to check this out, though. 14 fisheye photos per panorama and 360-degree view of different sections of the ISS. It sounds very cool. And other than...
A few episodes, Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say, other than seeing these kind of spacecraft in museums, you really don't get that kind of opportunity, and this one's still operational.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've seen similar things of vintage war airplanes and stuff like that, and they're really cool. People who take the time to do that, first of all, thank you, and it's awesome. I'm definitely going to check this out, because before I wanted to check it out, but the link wasn't working for whatever reason. Now it is, so I'm going to have a quick look at it and come back with my synopsis of the whole thing. And I was going to say something else, but I forgot.
Well, that's okay. That means we can move on, because there's no anecdote to go with the story. And I should probably make sure our levels are still pretty good. Okay, levels look good. There's also a short story here. Cheryl, you want to hit this one?
Nah.
All right, fine. I'll do it. All right, so there's a new website for the amateur radio community. Not like these don't happen every day, but this one got mentioned here for whatever reason. Programming radios can be a bit daunting. Yes, sometimes it can, sometimes it's not so hard, but if you have a Chinese radio, you probably know how daunting it actually can be. So a website has been launched to share memory files for radios. As the site grows, they hope it will become a global portal for memory files. So that's pretty cool.
That's cool. Yeah.
And that site, by the way, is www.codeplugcentral.co.uk. So it's a British site. And that sounds pretty cool, having all of the memory files ready and available to plug into your software. And I didn't have a chance to actually go look at this, but I'm looking at it right now. And let's see.
Me too.
They have code. They have memory site or memory files for Baofeng, Connect Systems, Hytera, ICOM, Kenwood, Motorola, Taitera, Woosung, and Yaesu. So there you go.
I just plugged on Woosung, and there's nothing. So I guess the website's been created, but they're waiting for downloads.
Oh, I see. They're waiting for downloads. Right. Okay. So let's see. Let's pick a bigger one. Okay.
Baofeng has all repeaters, simplex, and extra in the GT3 area. So let's see. ICOM, that's a pretty big one, has nothing.
Yaesu has the FT7900 series, which is useful for me because I actually have an FT7900. So, but for everyone who has a Yaesu that's not an FT7900, not very useful here for you.
It's a brand new website.
It's obviously just starting.
Yeah. ICOM, nothing. Kenwood, nothing. Motorola. Does anyone actually use a Motorola for ham radio?
Yeah, actually, there's
Repeater our guys, systems, maybe.
Yeah, no, one of our guys has, one of the gentlemen in our club and his son use Motorola radios because they're unkillable. Like they go 4x4ing in the woods, or not 4x4ing, but one of those little quad bikes that people kill themselves on. And he says that he has this radio on him, and it doesn't matter what you do to it, it's unkillable. So they take them and they have to program them. You need to be a little bit savvy and know how to program the chips. But once you do, these radios are just indestructible. The old Motorolas, it says they weigh a ton, but it's like those old cell phones that look like army radios. You can't kill them,
Right.
People actually use them. I was surprised. They actually sold me on them, to tell you the truth. They even use them in their mobiles, and they're dirt cheap.
Yeah, you can find them on eBay pretty cheap if you go looking for the old Motorolas. I have an old Motorola sitting here that I was going to use for IRLP. I just never got around to it.
Well, it's never too late.
Yeah, that's true. It's never too late. And on the website, it says, if you have a code plug that is of use to the community, please email it to codeplugcentral@gmail.com. And it says, please send only your own work, not copyrighted stuff. And by sharing, you are adding your bit to supporting the amateur radio community. So there you go. Support the amateur radio Absolutely. Community and make this site actually worth something. So we didn't record
it. Yeah, well, like I said, it's brand new. So, as people contribute, it could become huge.
That's very true. It could. So there's one last story in our ham radio section, and that is that a solar storm forced ham radio drill to shut down early. This is interesting. I have heard a lot about the solar activity of late. So
yeah, Pete submitted this.
Yeah, I wouldn't actually say that it forced ham radio. The ham bench. My God, the field day. Shut down early. but it certainly limited operations and contacts on the second day of the contest. So I'll kind of cross-read this because it was kind of a long article, but basically it states that ham radio operators testing their communication system this past weekend, which was a few weekends ago, as a way to prepare. Anyways, I won't go through that because everybody knows what field day is. For those who don't, very quickly, it's a simulation of emergency communications. But it states that the recent solar storm, which basically the sun basically exploded late on Saturday and basically ruined the ionosphere for everybody. And of course, field day, you know, people try to speak as far as they can. So long distance propagation of ham signals were somewhat disrupted. So basically, a lot of people said that their Saturday was good, but their Sunday sucked, you know, basically. So they state, however, that everything doesn't really always work out in your favor. So in the case of an emergency, you know, there might be an emergency right after a solar flare. So you also have to be prepared for this. And you still communicate, you just couldn't communicate as far. And, you know, everything was a lot noisier. But that doesn't mean that it put an end to the field day. It just means that everything was very much more challenging. So in a way, it's not really a bad thing. The article makes it sound like, oh, my God, field day was ruined. If you're a diehard contester, yeah, it was ruined. But that's not the whole point of field day. Field day is more an exercise in seeing if your communication equipment works, if you're, you know, able to set up an emergency station really quick, if you have to bug out, yada, yada, yada. So, you know, if you have to deal with a solar flare, you have to deal with it. Emergencies don't always happen on beautiful sunny days. So I don't look at it as a negative thing, but it did make a field day a little bit more challenging. So this was from a website called signalscv.com, and I think I saw the article kind of by chance on a Facebook post.
All right, so moving on to the sun
Sorry.
So moving on from the exploding sun, Pete, how did your field day go?
Well, actually, my field day was pretty cool. It was the first time that I did my own personal field day. Year after year, I was involved in our club's field day for a number of years, which was great. I mean, I had a blast, and they're always fun. But I always said I would like to go off on my own and set up, you know, because in an emergency, my club might just not be around. So for the first time this year, the club, in its infinite wisdom, decided that field day, you know, wasn't really, not to get into the politics, but they decided that it cost too much for what it was worth for the club. And, you know, fair enough, the club can decide what the club wants. So they decided not to have one this year. So I set up in a friend's apartment building. So my friend's apartment is on the top floor of a four-story building. So me and him set up a very long wire antenna, about 136 feet. And I set it up from the fourth floor balcony over to a very tall tree that's kind of across into the his building backs onto the police station. So we were setting up an antenna in the police station, waiting to see what would happen there. But nothing came of it, which is kind of scary, because you figured they should be watching their backyard, but they're not. Ha ha ha. So on this Saturday, it was great. You know, I contacted as far as the coast of Morocco, which was a first for me. Like, I was so excited. But then again, on the Sunday, everything was noisy and I could, you know, not hear very much. And I was wondering what was going on. Figuring maybe, you know, electrical activity in the area, blah, blah, blah. Not even thinking of checking any of the websites that explain solar activity, but then we found out why. So,
space weather.
That was my first field day on my own. Yeah, yeah. Or what's the other one? Solar Cycle 24 is another good one that I like. Space weather also, as you mentioned. But yeah, fun field day, the first on my own. My friend's not a ham, but he kind of helped me and I kind of tutored him into what was ham radio. And, you know, he kind of came and went, but he was gracious enough to leave me his balcony, and it was pretty cool.
So how many contacts did you make?
13.
Really?
Yep. So I'm not a diehard contester. I was kind of more of a as you could tell. But yeah, 13, we only started setting up at 2 p.m. local time, which is when the contest starts. So by the time we got set up and, you know, so we'd kind of have a beer and relax and chat. And then so I'd go back to radio and then hang around with him for a while and then did other things. And so it was kind of back and forth a lot. It wasn't a very serious field day for me, but it's what I wanted it to be. It was just a fun day and made a few contacts, listened a lot, and scanned the bands quite a bit to see what I could hear. So yeah, but I made 13 contacts, mostly into the mid and southern United States. Throughout the day, everything kind of changes. You know, it shifts from west to east as the day progresses. And yeah, my last contact was actually Morocco, which was very, very exciting. I'd never even talked to anywhere near Africa, so I was very excited.
Oh, that's very cool. I do have a contact in Morocco, and I also have one in South Africa, but I don't think I have any anywhere else in Africa. Seems like Africa is fairly hard to get to most of the time.
Well, that's why I was so excited. It was very late in the day. It was my last contact. It's probably 9 o'clock at night local time, so Eastern time. And yeah, it was very cool. I was kind of jumping up and down on the balcony. People must have thought I was weird, but
well, that's okay. Cool. Well, your field day experience is much more interesting than mine because I did not participate in field day this year. So hopefully I will get around to it and do it next year. There was some reason why I didn't. I think we were busy that weekend. In fact, I know we were busy that weekend. Huh? Oh, yeah, that's right. We had the show. Yeah, so we were very busy that weekend. Could not participate, but perhaps next year we will be able to participate.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing we didn't plan on contacting each other.
Yeah, that did kind of fall through. Oh, well. We can plan on contacting each other just like through the normal course of events, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, I have to get an antenna back up soon. So the antennas at my home were eaten by squirrels, so I had to take them both down, which is funny because today, actually, amusing anecdote, the Bell Canada guy comes. Bell Canada is our phone provider. Comes knocking on the door. He says, I need access to your yard. I have to run a new phone line because squirrels ate your neighbor's phone line. And I felt better because it wasn't just my antennas that the squirrels were eating.
Well, that's okay because I saw on Facebook that squirrels ate a friend of mine.
A friend of yours?
Yes. Like they actually ate a person.
Okay. Dare we ask?
Well, okay, he's not technically a friend of mine, but he's a friend of mine. And he wasn't actually devoured, but apparently they attacked him pretty violently.
Really?
Yes.
Attack squirrels.
Attack squirrels. Yep. I've never heard of it either, but he showed...
What was he doing?
Apparently tending to a fire pit. And he showed pictures of his wounds, and it looked pretty severe, actually.
Well, they have big front teeth. If they decided to. So I always fed them as a child. My mom would say, you know, don't feed the squirrels. They're going to attack you. But you just kind of hold the peanut there and you don't freak them out. Maybe they saw that movie, the one where the animals attack everyone.
Attack of the Squirrels?
No, just there's a movie coming out or just came out about how all the animals turn on people. And I'm not sure what it's called. I'll have to do a search.
Well, I think they've done that one before. Hitchcock did one all about birds.
Yeah, that was an awesome movie. That's one of my favorite Hitchcock films. Freaked me out as a kid. Didn't want to go outside for weeks.
Well, you saw it at the right time of your life then.
I was the same way. I didn't want to go outside or anywhere near anything that might have a bird. And I was like 7 when I saw it. So
lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Hitchcock. Yeah, that's the beauty of Hitchcock is today horror movies and, you know, they're all like gore and they show you everything, but Hitchcock didn't show you anything. He let your imagination work, and that was right. Even scarier,
right?
And that's the beauty of Hitchcock.
Yeah, everybody knows the
haven't discovered Hitchcock yet.
Everybody knows the shower scene in Psycho involved Hershey's syrup.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, not necessarily Hershey's syrup, but chocolate syrup apparently was used as a stand-in for the blood because it looks more like blood on black and white film than actual blood.
Blood did, yeah. Really?
And actual blood's harder to come by.
Yeah, well, you would think.
One of my neighbors recently asked me, I work in a hospital, and she's like, hey, can you get me a liter of blood?
You're like,
what? She's like, yeah, well, it was for Halloween. She wanted blood. I'm like, you work in a hospital. It must be pretty easy. I'm like, are you serious? Not just because I work there that I could just walk in and take blood. It's like, I was just like, it's just very random.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, you can make, you know, fake blood with some Kool-Aid and corn syrup.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. I'll tell her that.
Yeah, you should. There's probably a Pinterest thing about making it somewhere, but
we had a band come out and play here. I think it was 2 years ago that did a lot of stuff with fake blood and intestines made out of stuff stuffed into pantyhose and drenched in cornstarch and syrup and stuff like that. Yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah, all the bands do the blood stuff with, you know, corn syrup and Kool-Aid.
And they throw stuff into the audience and it gets messy and everyone like eats it up, and not literally eats it up. You know what I mean by eats it up. And
if it's Kool-Aid, it'd be good.
Yeah.
Well, but people, for some reason, people at these metal shows, when you throw blood at them, this fake blood, they're like, yes. And they're like running into it and you're like, ugh, okay. So
what kind of shows you guys put on?
Pretty nasty ones, apparently.
I'm not coming to visit you. okay, what kind of pie you make me?
No. Trust me, there was a friend of ours got married, and he was one of the singers in a band. And apparently, one of the very first shows he did, they decided they were going to throw something out into the audience. Anyway, locusts or something, but they couldn't find him. Yeah, they couldn't find him cheap enough, so they ended up buying like 10,000 crickets or something. They were supposed to be delivered the day of the show. They actually showed up a week before that. They called the people that they bought them from and they went, oh, you know, just feed them lettuce, they'll be fine. So they did. And apparently by the time, you know, the crickets were living in the box, by the time show day rolled around, the box was disintegrating due to cricket waste and lettuce and et cetera. So apparently, you know, the time in their set of their songs that they wanted to throw these locusts or whatever out into the audience, the box disintegrated and they were just throwing handfuls of, you know, cricket waste and crickets and disintegrated cardboard box. And people were loving it. And apparently at the end of the show, there was a 7-year-old kid there who came up to him with a strip of the disintegrated cardboard box and wanted the band to sign it. And I was like, ew. And they told this story during the wedding. Nice. Just like, not? Ugh, okay. So, yeah, it's... But people love stuff like that. I'm just like, you people are sick. Sick. So,
and for those of you wondering what the hell we're talking about, well, this is the kind of stuff that gets edited
out of the podcast. Yeah.
What the hell's going on? What am I listening to?
So, let's move on to open source topics. How about that?
Back to our really big shoe. Really big acts and really big personalities.
All right, it's my understanding, according to this song.
It's song?
Song? Boy.
Speaking of crickets.
Yeah, speaking of cricket shit. Apparently, there's now an official Raspberry Pi case. So, you want to take this one?
Sure. So, anyway, I was digging around online last week and found a story in LinuxGizmos.com about an official Raspberry Pi case. It is an injected molded plastic case that is notable for offering an easily removable clip-on lid. The lid enables the addition of an RPI hat, add-on boards, and offers easy access to camera and display ports. It's a 5-piece case. It supports Model B and the Pi 2 Model B. The Model A Plus will fit, but the USB port is not accessible externally. All ports have been exposed on the sides of the device, including the micro SD slot. A removable side plate provides access to 40 expansion pins, and power and activity LEDs remain visible. And the case, of course, has got 4 cute little anti-slip feet. The cost of it in Europe is about £6, which is about $9 US. There's only one place apparently in the US that has it, which is MCM Electronics. And it is gotta have a little link in the show notes about that.
Well, that's good.
I'm looking at it right now. It's pretty cool.
I thought it was cool too.
I didn't look at the new case, but I actually just ordered a Pi 2B from MCM, and I got a different case than this one. So it's supposed to work with the Pi 2B, and it actually looks kind of similar to this one, although it doesn't have the ability to stack boards with the case on. It's a fully enclosed box, and it's black instead of the sort of white and red multicolored look of this one. But it's pretty cool looking. I think I paid about the same for the one I got. So
you didn't get an official case.
Yeah, it's cheap too. So, I mean, that's $10 is, you know.
Yeah. No, I didn't get the official one, but I did get one, and I'm looking forward to my new Pi 2B when it gets here. I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet, but, you know, at least I'll have one.
You'll find a...
I'm sure I'll find something to do with it, yep.
Even if it sits on the shelf.
No, I'll do something with it. We'll see.
Okay.
All right. Okay. All right.
All right.
Run out and buy one.
Yes, let's do that. All right, Pete, what's our other thing for this segment? Open source is what we're talking about here. That's kind of open hardware, but now we're talking about open software.
Well, it's open hardware for open source stuff.
That's right.
So we're going to jump into Fedora. And it seems that Fedora 22 is leaving some people hungry for 23. So a release of the Fedora operating system, being the mostly regular 6 monthly events that they are, don't usually find themselves worthy of note. But with Fedora 22, however, changes arrive thick and fast, that they claim, they being ZDNet is where we got the story. The release's desktop environment got a new, flatter look. The package manager of choice changed. GCC was updated to the 5 series. And the next generation of display server inched towards general availability. The most noticeable change a user sees when loading the latest version of Fedora is the new look sported by GNOME 3.16. Like a majority of operating system updates in recent times, the default GNOME theme is flatter and less glossy than that was seen previously. Beyond the aesthetics, however, Fedora's package manager of choice has switched from Yum to DNF. That might make some happy, and others not. Entering a Yum command, we'll see it routed to the appropriate DNF equivalent, however. While Yum always loved to pull its repository sources, DNF is more reserved, but otherwise, DNF is simply a better version of Yum. Another big change that goes almost unnoticed, is the use of Wayland to power the GDM login screen in this release. Set to become the default display server in Fedora 23, Wayland is creeping towards being ready for prime time, but it's not quite there. I'm not familiar with Wayland. I'd be curious, though. For folks who want to be on the bleeding edge, Fedora 22 allows for running GNOME and Wayland rather than using an X server, but the future comes at a cost. Wayland is slower than X, thanks to not having years of driver development work done. Some apps will refuse to open. Will refuse to open particular windows. The rough edges of Wayland are representative of the feel of this release. It's 95% of the way there, but not quite complete. So, as I said, you can read the complete article at ZDNet. It's called "A Month with Fedora 22 Leaves Me Hungry for 23." What's to say 23 is going to be better? Just have to wait and see, I guess. You guys played with this at all?
I have not played with it at all. I haven't used Fedora in quite some time, but it might be interesting to take a look at it again. I usually only run RPM-based distributions for work when software requires it, and Fedora tends to be a little more bleeding edge, shall we say. It's not really useful in production environments. So, yeah, I haven't touched Fedora in a little while, but I might give it another look.
I said GNOME. Some people say GNOME.
Yeah,
know why I always say GNOME. I guess because I work in a hospital.
I say GNOME only because I talked to someone more than one person who works on the GNOME Foundation, and they say that's how it's pronounced.
Oh, I'm sure. I just like to say GNOME because it sounds more medical.
Well, that's true, but the GNOME is a different thing entirely.
It is, and probably wouldn't work in Fedora.
Well, it might. They probably sequenced the genome in Fedora. Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah. The sequence, the genome, and gnome.
There you go.
All right. So anyway, that was a couple of open source topics we had for this time, and I threw in a couple of things for Linux in the Ham Shack. There was something else I was thinking about putting in, but I never actually got around to doing it, so we only have two topics for tonight. The first one I thought I would throw in just so we could jump back to the basics for a little bit, which is something we haven't done in a while. And I have seen lots of posts on like the Ubuntu Hams mailing lists or in other sources that are talking about linking radios to your Linux PC. And a lot of people seem to have trouble getting their serial port communications to work. And it's a basic tenet of using your radio with your computer that you have to have serial port connectivity so you can get data back and forth between your radio. The way this works in Linux is pretty simple, especially in most modern distributions. Under the directory /dev, there are TTY files, which stand for terminal. Originally, this stood for teletype, but people understand them to be terminals now. And each of these represents a device that's connected to the computer. Now, the serial ports in modern Linux distributions are referenced by TTY, a capital S, and then the number in sequence of the serial port. The first one, serial 1, or COM 1, as it's known from the, you know, DOS and Windows days, would be S0. COM 2 would be S1, COM 3, S2, so on and so forth. So your first serial device on your PC, if that's the one using to connect to your radio, will be /dev/TTY S0. And it will go up from there, depending on which one you're using. Now, if you're using USB to serial converters, it's going to be a little bit different. Those will be referenced by /dev/TTY U S B, and then starting with a zero. So /dev/TTY USB 0, USB 1, 2, so on and so forth. Now, once you know what device you're going to be trying to connect to, there are a couple of considerations. The first of those is that you need to make sure that the serial port parameters for your hardware matches the serial port parameters for your computer. So if you're going to be operating your software at 57600 baud with 8 parity bits and 1 stop bit, you have to make sure it's configured that way, and you have to make sure your radio matches. And then, of course, you have to make sure that you're using the correct serial port. So most software makes it pretty easy to configure which serial port you're using. You just have to know which one you're plugged into. And then the other consideration that most people seem to miss, and the one that causes the most problems when trying to connect to your radio, is that you don't make yourself, the user of the computer, a member of the dial-out group. That's D-I-A-L-O-U-T, the dial-out group. That is the default group that has read-write access to the serial ports in a Linux distribution. And you are not, as a user of a Linux system, generally included in that group. And if you're not included in that group, you will have no access to the serial port, no matter how hard you try. So it's important that you edit the /etc/group file and add yourself to the dial-out group. You can also use the add group command or the ch group command, or any number of other ways to give yourself access to the serial ports or the serial port devices on your computer. That's the one thing that most people seem to forget, and it's actually the most important when it comes to making your serial port actually interact with whatever hardware you have connected.
They're forgetting, or maybe just don't know they have to do that.
That's very true. It may not be evident, and it probably isn't evident that you need to be a member of that group. Now, this could vary by Linux distributions, but all of the ones that I am aware of that are out currently use dial-out as the default for serial input devices. So you just have to make sure that you are added to that group, however you go about doing that, and that should give you access to it. Now, just remember that once you've added yourself to that group, you will generally have to log out of your session and back in order to actually get that access. Just simply adding yourself to the etc group file and staying connected or logged in doesn't actually give you access. You actually have to quit your session, restart a new bash or a new shell or a new X Windows session or whatever, and then you will have that group access. And then you'll be able to configure and use your serial ports properly. So Just some basic information there. And since a lot of stuff is digital now and uses inter-hardware to computer communication, real important to have that under your belt. So that was that. Anything I left out?
Well, sounds pretty straightforward. It's like everything else. Once you know, it's easy.
Right. It can get a little complicated if you're running under Wine, because if you're running some Windows software in Linux under Wine and you need to connect a serial port, there is a specific Wine configuration you need to set up in order to link your COM ports as they exist in Windows, as Wine would know them, to the serial port devices. And that's beyond the scope of this little tutorial, but it's perhaps something we can talk about later. Someone wants to ask a question about that. I can address it in a future episode, but that's a little more complex than just running something natively in Linux.
Cool.
Cool, man.
Man.
Cool, man. All right. And this next one, that was my sort of like, you know, big Linux-y topic of the evening. This other one is something that I saw on the Ubuntu Hams mailing list, which you should definitely check out if you're interested in ham radio on Linux, because they talk about all kinds of topics, not necessarily Ubuntu-related. A lot of it does go across different distributions. Some of it, of course, is Ubuntu-specific, but if you want to check out the Ubuntu Hams mailing list, I would recommend doing that, and let me see if I can look up where that is exactly, because I didn't bother to put it in the show notes, because that's the way I roll.
Like to live on the edge.
Yeah. Okay, a place to get to the link where you can actually subscribe to the Ubuntu Hams mailing list is at wiki.ubuntu.com/UbuntuHams, with the first U in Ubuntu and the first H in Hams capitalized. And that will be in the show notes. I will include it in the Etherpad. Speaking of the Etherpad, I haven't seen Harrison in a while. Wonder how he's doing.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard from him either. I figured I would. Usually he kind of sees if we want to do anything for a field day together. The last time he texted me was probably like 2 months ago, I think. It's been a while. But then again, he's always involved in a whole bunch of stuff, so maybe life just has him kept busy.
Yeah, perhaps so. Well, hopefully when I decide to release all the back episodes, he'll actually come out and do the show notes. I guess we'll find out, won't we?
We will.
All right. So here's another quick topic. And as I said, while I was looking at the Ubuntu Hams mailing list, this guy advertised his own website, which is alpha-delta-zero-echo-sierra.net, ADZeroES.net, where he is putting up a basically just a short textual information site for getting a computer for your ham shack set up using Ubuntu. And what it is basically him documenting the steps that he used to install Ubuntu, to install the basic ham radio software, including like ham library and stuff like that. Now, it is a little bit specific to the types of hardware and software that he is familiar with, and it's actually pretty sparse right now, but I assume that it will be added to as he continues to develop the computer he's using in his ham shack. But for a basic look and a quick look at just reading through some simple commands, because he actually gives you the commands to type, the apt-get, install, blah, 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 things that you can actually cut and paste into your system to get a basic ham shack computer set up using Ubuntu, both 12.04 and 14.04, I believe. So if that's something you're interested in and you want to try Ubuntu for your ham shack, you can go to that website. And once you go onto the website, click on the top link, which is Ubuntu for Hams, and then read through the basic information. And then there's a link to the directory, which gives you a table of contents where you can go to kind of step through what you need to do in order to get Ubuntu installed on your machine and then a basic set of ham radio software. So maybe a little beginner's resource for getting started. And of course, then you can go through all of our episodes and then you'll be an expert user by the time you get done with that. It may be 2017 by the time you do, but at least you'll be an expert.
That's never too late. There's no timetable.
That's right. All right. Well, that's pretty much all I had for topics and everything for before we hit the musical break. So I guess we'll hit the musical break. And it was my understanding, Pete, that you desperately wanted to hear some Brad Sucks for this episode.
Yeah, well, not desperately, but it's been a while. I mean, I remember from, being a longtime listener that we used to play him quite regularly. And it'd been a long time since we heard from Brad. So I thought we'd throw some in for nostalgia's sake. This being episode 150. So threw in one of his latest contributions released in January of 2013. Yeah, it's been a couple of years, but it's still his latest. Brad Sucks is one-man band, pretty talented, usually from Ottawa here in Canada, the nation's capital, from the album Guess Who's a Mess. This was courtesy of our friends at Jamendo, and this song is called The Fluoride. It's pretty rockin', and I always kind of liked it, and I thought it was a good choice for tonight, so I hope you guys like it.
Picking up my broken teeth, I spit them out cause I can't swallow anything. Mouthwash is pumping through my veins just to help me get me on my feet and clean again. Coming straight out of your mouth and into the ground. Coming straight out of your mouth and into the ground. Flavor, I'll be taking pains to do the things I gotta do to be the same. I don't feel the way I think I seem. Maybe I can work it out in surgery. Coming straight out of your mouth and into the ground. Coming straight out of your mouth and into the ground.
Kind of get the impression he's actually talking about toothpaste in that song, don't you? And Pete's muted.
Yep. I think it's all a what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know. What's the word you're looking for?
a thing that references another thing.
Meta?
Sure. No.
Oh, you mean an allegory?
Yes. It's one of those.
The chat room is apparently dead, but I think we've killed everyone. So no one's paying attention to the show, which is just fine. Why is our 150th is going to be our worst episode ever?
No. People are waiting to listen to the the recording. Yeah.
I'm sure that's exactly it. Well, anyway, we should probably move on to our... Go ahead.
Because he's saying, thanks for picking up my broken teeth. I spit them out because I can't swallow anything. Mouthwash is pumping through my veins just to help me get on my feet and clean again. So it's an allegory.
And what is it an allegory for?
Love.
I see.
Or lack of love, maybe.
Okay. We'll go with that.
About it. Taste the flavor. I'll be taking pains to do the things I gotta do to be the same. I don't feel the way I think I seem. Maybe I can work it out in surgery. I don't know. Brad sucks is weird.
Brad sucks. He sucks.
But we like his music.
We do like his music. And you have to like somebody who's self-deprecating enough to call himself Brad sucks, right?
Well, you know he's gay, right?
Yes. I believe that has come up before.
So I'm wondering if it's just...
I see what you mean. He's being literal, in other words.
Sucks.
Yeah. Well, that's entirely possible, yes. Have you asked? Maybe you should email.
I asked, I've never met him. I actually wanted to go see him live last year when he came to Montreal. Because, he's Ottawa is only 2 hours away from here. So for him to play a show in Montreal is quite easy. But I couldn't make it that night, unfortunately. We'd planned on going and it fell through. And it was kind of a shame. So I should check out next time he comes. Because I'd really like to see him live. I actually enjoy his music. And I hear he's a really nice guy, and he plays in these really small venues around town, so I'm sure he'd be very approachable, too.
Yeah, that would be fun. Maybe the next time he comes to Montreal, we can all go up there and see him. We can do a field trip. That would be neat.
Let's see him when he's coming. Radsucks.net.
I wonder if he's even, still performing, since he hasn't released anything since 2013.
Well, maybe his hits are so big that he doesn't have to release anything new.
Oh, I'm sorry. That wasn't a cynical laugh. I was just laughing.
Yeah, shows. No upcoming shows. Okay, I guess we won't be seeing him anytime soon.
Yeah, probably not. Apparently, he tweets fairly regularly, though, or something. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. That's odd_vice. Is that Brad Sucks? Is that his Twitter account?
I have no idea.
I know. It's on his site there, bradsucks.net.
I'm looking. I can't find the tweet icon.
No, that's not
there
him.
It is.
He's at Bradsucks.
At Bradsucks, yeah.
At
exactly.
Bradsucks, yeah. So, has he tweeted anything recently? Let's see.
I haven't been on Twitter in forever.
Let's see. I'm looking at his Twitter feed right now. His last tweet was, a couple of days ago. So, yes, he does tweet.
Well, tweet him back and ask him when he's coming to Montreal or Kansas.
I can do that.
And he'll probably answer you.
Kansas.
I don't know, wherever you live. Arkansas. It's all the same.
Kansas isn't too far. Missouri would be closer, but...
I don't know why I said Kansas.
Russ doesn't live in Arkansas anymore either.
Tonto, Toto, it's all the same in my head.
Your tent's missing.
indeed. Anyhow.
All right. Anywho. Yeah. We only have a couple of things to mention in our announcements and feedback section. The first is an announcement, and that's that the Amateur Radio Roundtable is looking for guests. I was a guest on the Amateur Radio Roundtable.
You were. You're a good guest, too.
They want more guests. Guests other than me. So if you're interested in being a guest, or if you know someone who would like to be a guest, and if you have an interesting topic to discuss on the show, you need to contact Tom, W5KUB. And W5KUB.com, as we have already mentioned on previous shows, is well known for its live webcasts of ham radio events, including Hamvention. And they simulcast their live Tuesday night amateur radio roundtable show on the shortwave station WTWW on 5085 kilohertz. And that, of course, will be airing tomorrow night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time, same time as ours, just one day later.
So hurry up.
Yep. So, you know, they're always looking for good topics and good guests. So even if you don't get to be on this week, there's always next week and the week after and so on and so on and so on. Like Carrie is so very. I'm confusing beauty products, aren't I?
I have no idea what beauty products are selling.
Which was the one that had the video that had the duplicating screens that said, and so on, and so on.
And so on.
Oh, come on. Cheryl's looking at him like, what the hell are you talking about? What crack are you smoking?
It's not CoverGirl, no. It was a shampoo, right? So on.
Yeah, I believe it was for shampoo.
And so on commercial. Let's see. Fabergé Organic Shampoo.
There it is. Fabergé Organic, yep.
That's all the way back in the 80s.
Yeah, so I am apparently mixing up my beauty products.
Apparently I missed that or something.
You missed the 80s, didn't you?
I did. I must have slept through it. So
it's Heather Locklear is the one who did that. And so on.
And so on.
And so on. And then the screen would kind of multiply like a, you know, the Brady Bunch from hell.
I think it was parodied on Saturday Night Live and probably other places as well.
Oh, most likely.
Yeah.
I don't think there was anything that was not parodied on Saturday Night Live.
I think Saturday Night Live was parodied on Saturday Night Live regularly.
Yeah. As it should be. Any good comedian or comedy who doesn't laugh at himself is not worthy of me.
Kleewick suggests that the episode title should be "Your Tent's Missing," which I definitely, think it probably should. I just have to find a picture on the internet that sums up "Your Tent's Missing" as a photo.
And by tent, he means wits, intelligence.
Anyway, Simbola also asked, did we participate in Field Day? And as has previously brought up, been brought up on the show, I did not participate in Field Day because we had to plan and host a metal concert that night. Pete did participate in Field Day and made a whopping, an astounding 13 contacts.
Yep, I'm going to win.
And it's funny, when you said 13, I was waiting for you to say something else. I figured it was going to be followed up by 100.
139. That's how you build up anticipation.
Yeah.
No, I'm not a serious contester by any means. I'm more of a listener. You know, 95% of my ham radio operation is listening. You know, you would think I talk a lot because I can't shut up when I do a podcast. But as people who will listen to episode 150's unedited version will find out. But yeah, on radio, it's not that I'm shy. I just like to listen and tune around and see what I can hear and play with the knobs and buttons. And so yeah, 13 contacts. And I was very satisfied with that. You know, I'm not disappointed in any way, shape, or form.
That was like that contest a little while back that I was talking about that I jumped in at the during the last hour of, and I can't remember which one it is, so apologies to the people who hosted that contest, but and I was like disappointed that I missed my 100 contacts, even though I only jumped in an hour before the contest ended. But oh well, I'm not a serious contester either. I was just, it's like when you get close to 100, you want 100, you know, you don't want it to be like 97.
No, 99 is cool, or 101.
Well, 101 I would have been happy with, but I think I had 95 when it was
still,
all said and done.
Still very respectable.
It was fairly respectable, but the bands were also very good, and it was very easy to make contacts. So
yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, I see, it all depends on the day. So.
Excuse me.
Simbola liked your "I'm going to win" comment. And
I don't know what I'm going to win.
That actually brought me back to that movie we were talking about at the baseball game yesterday. A League of Their Own.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tom Hanks scene where
we're gonna win.
Yeah, she showed back up and started giving him hell, and he's like,
it was Stewie.
Was it?
Yeah, he hit Stewie in the head with the baseball.
His name wasn't Stewie. It was
Stewart or whatever.
No.
Is that from Family Guy?
Yeah, no, Stewie's from Family Guy, but no.
No, I thought they called him Stewie.
No. It was what the hell was his name?
I think it was Stewart.
It wasn't Stewart. I'm telling you right now, it wasn't Stewart.
We'll just call him Bob.
Stillwell.
Stillwell, that was it.
Stillwell. Right. That's Stillwell weird. Angel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he hit Stillwell in the head with the mitt, and when Stillwell fell over, he's like, oh, we're going to win.
I don't think it went that way, but apparently I'm misremembering the movie. Screw it. Anyway. If you haven't seen A League of Their Own, by the way, to totally digress, you should definitely go see it. It's a great film, maybe. A fantastic film. There's no way you can see that film and not enjoy it. I was particularly fond of John Lovitz. I thought his character was great.
John Lovitz is awesome. He's like one of my favorite, like, you know, secondary actors, if you want. He's never had like any big giant roles, but he's hilarious.
He is hilarious. And he had a couple of great, great lines in A League of Their Own. Have you seen A League of Their Own, Pete?
I have not, actually.
Oh, you need to see A League of Their Own. It's a fantastic movie. Directed by Penny Marshall, starring Tom Hanks. I mean, it's just, how can you go wrong with it?
Yeah, Tom Hanks is, you know, I wouldn't say an all-time favorite, but most of his movies are entertaining. And Penny Marshall is an awesome, awesome director.
Yep.
So, and very fond of Laverne and Shirley from way back when, so there's a place in my heart for her.
Yeah, I used to watch Laverne and Shirley a lot. I liked the whole cast out of Laverne and Shirley. I thought they were great.
Mm-hmm. I just watched the clip of the movie. That's
With Stillwell. Yeah. We're gonna win. We're gonna win. Yeah. Anyway, definitely see A League of Their Own. It's fantastic.
That and the Big Lebowski. I actually bought the Big Lebowski.
Russ so loves. I am going to see Lebowski.
It
soon.
I know. He's the one who recommended it months ago. And I was at the local video store, and they always put movies on sale for like, you know, $3 for $5 or whatever, and they're trying to get rid of them. And I saw the Big Lebowski, and had it not been for us, it wouldn't be in my movie collection now. So it's one of the movies in my movie collection that I have yet to see, because I'm a firm believer that a library and a movie collection, you know, you should have books and movies in your collection that you haven't seen for those rainy days. So I will get around to seeing it one of these days.
Well, what I would do is I would highly recommend getting Citizen Kane and never watching it, but then definitely watching The Big Lebowski.
I've seen Citizen Kane. I don't need to buy it.
Citizen Kane was probably the single biggest disappointment for me in film history.
Yeah, well, you know, it comes from a classic book, so...
No, I understand but, you
know, that. Doesn't make it a good movie.
And though. It was also done years ago.
No, I love some old movies. I mean, I don't have an issue with watching an older film, because we went and saw Casablanca, and I loved Casablanca. I thought that was a fantastic movie. But Citizen Kane is like, I think if you look at IMDb, Citizen Kane is like number 3 or something on the all-time best movies list, and it was the biggest disappointment. It was the worst crap. Well, okay, it wasn't a terrible movie, but I mean... Number 3? Give me a break. Well,
have you seen Grapes of Wrath?
I saw Grapes of Wrath back in high school.
Yeah, I wasn't impressed with that either.
I love John Steinbeck, though. I think he's a great writer, so...
Yeah, whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, whatever. Fuck John Steinbeck.
Yeah.
Sucks.
I thought A Separate Piece was great, even though it was very depressing. I also thought... what was the one that they did the recent movie of? Bridge to Terabithia?
I love that movie.
Yeah, that's not Steinbeck, I don't think. But it's a great book and a great film. So, anyway,
that movie made me cry.
There's a movie that, well, no, I can't even talk about it, because I told you that I can't tell you what the name of it is, because you're going to go find out what it's about and then you'll ruin it. So I can't.
I'll ruin it for everyone.
No, not Pete. Cheryl. I'm talking to Cheryl, not you, okay. Pete. Sorry.
Ruined it. You ruined my life.
Oh, anyway. We should probably move on.
Bridge to Terabithia was written by Catherine Patterson.
Catherine Patterson, okay.
It was published in 1977.
Yeah, that's about when I read it.
But the movie made me cry. It's so sad.
It is sad. It's about the death of a young person. How can that not be sad?
I know, and you don't expect it in a movie. It's like, I was watching it with my kids. We're all bawling. It's like, what the fuck? That and Up. My kids always laugh.
Oh, Up is such a great film, though.
It is. It's one of my favorites, but that part at the beginning, you know how they meet as kids and blah, 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 and I won't go into it if you haven't seen it, but just that beginning part is just so sad. And every time, I don't bawl, but it brings tears to my eyes, because it's just so beautiful. It's just such a beautiful part of their life.
I'll tell you one thing.
And you know what part I'm talking about, of course.
Yes, oh no, I know exactly what part you're talking about. And speaking of that, speaking of tearful moments in Pixar movies, there is one that gets me every damn time, and it's the scene of Jesse being left in Toy Story 2. I swear, I cry every time I see that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Incredibly sad to me. But
and that's cute from you guys, because you know usually you're kind of, you know, guys are all tough and stuff, and then they have kids and they become blubbering fools. Anybody who has kids knows, but you guys have no kids and you're blubbering fools anyway.
Oh no! As soon as a Pixar movie shows up in the theaters, I'm like, I want to go see it. Yeah, when we sit there after we leave. Yeah. Sure. So,
yep.
Yeah, I even like the shorts that they play, like, you know, the birds pecking at each other.
Oh, yeah. And I kind of understand, since we're talking about movies, and this apparently is what this whole episode is going to be about, is movies.
Movies, yeah.
I swear, I honestly just need to start a movie podcast, because I am way more interested in movies than I am in ham radio. Full disclosure.
We'll edit that part out.
Truth. But anyway, apparently the new Pixar film, Inside Out, actually goes back to Pixar's roots. They allowed themselves not to be bastardized and pushed into the ground by Disney this time around, and actually got back to being Pixar again. And so I can't wait to actually see Inside Out. It should be fantastic. So
that's cool. My daughter saw Inside Out and she wants to go see it again. She said it was awesome.
Yeah.
So who posted this in the chat room? Calgary's balloon man destroyed describes soaring over city in lawn chair. Like, what the hell?
Yep, that's cool.
Only in Calgary, of course. I've lived in Calgary, so I'm not even surprised. So planning his okay. So Daniel Boria says he spent months planning his balloon stunt and planned to parachute into the stampede grounds. Okay, at least he was wearing a parachute, so that's good. So yeah, this guy, this was posted on CBC News, CBC being the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, as our national news, equivalent to Fox, with a little bit more integrity maybe. No offense to Fox fans. But this was posted on July 6th today at 4:49 p.m. Mountain Time. Calgary man used helium-filled balloons to fly over the city on Sunday, risking his life to draw attention to his cleaning products company. What an idiot. It's like,
well, but the thing is, if he gets killed,
he doesn't even have a sign.
If he gets killed, they might need his cleaning products to clean up.
To clean him up, yeah. So, $20 lawn chair. Wow. I knew I would get arrested, but I didn't think they would pursue me as heavily as they did. Oh, my God. Only in Calgary, like I said. Police unimpressed, really. What a shock. I mean, plus the Calgary airport, like the planes just fly right over the city as they take off. So I could just imagine him getting, you know, flung by a 747 or an Airbus.
I think it's funny that they're talking about floating over the city in Calgary. And because as far as I know, the only place where there are actually people in Alberta is Calgary. I mean, there like is no one else in the state or in the province, right?
I mean, well, there's Edmonton is the capital,
right?
It's actually, but Calgary is grown in leaps and bounds. Like Calgary is freaking huge. When I moved to Calgary in 2005, when I moved to Calgary, the airport was about 3 miles outside the city. By the time I moved back 10 years later, the city had surpassed the airport by about 10 kilometers. Like the airport is now within the city, and it's Calgary's actually almost reached the next city north and the next city south, which are two small towns, Airdrie and Okotoks. So it's amazing. I mean, they have lots of oil in Calgary. You know, it's kind of the equivalent of Texas in Canada. The economy is great. It's the only province that has no debt. It has no provincial sales tax. It's great for families. It's a great place to live. I really miss Alberta, I must admit. So a lot of people move there. There's a lot of work. The unemployment rate is the lowest in the country, so a lot of people end up there from all over the place. So yeah, it's booming, and it has been since the 80s.
Well, that's interesting. So, if you want to see the story of annexation of a territory, you should take a look at the story of O'Hare Airport in Chicago, which actually is nowhere near Chicago, but is part of Chicago. It's funny if you actually look at a map of the annexation of O'Hare Airport, because they needed it to be there for tax reasons or whatever political gambit they played as far as O'Hare. But basically, you can see that the shape of O'Hare is basically a circle, you know, bordered on the east by Lake Michigan, and a tiny little finger heading off to the northeast about 18 miles out, and then a little circle around O'Hare. And
that's seriously. So yep. There's just like this little like 1 mile corridor of Chicago, like for 18 kilometers or 18 miles.
Right. And then encompassing O'Hare. And that
that's funny. So getting back to this balloon guy, it says that he spent $20,000 for the stunt to advertise for his little cleaning company. Next, he's going to go bankrupt. So anyhow, I flew out of O'Hare once, and I'm told it's one of the busiest airports in North America.
It used to be the busiest until it was overtaken by Atlanta Hartsfield, which is now the busiest. So
this was in 1991, and I think the plane just took off straight up. That's how busy the airspace was. I was freaking out, and I left to fly. I was freaking out. I'd never been in such a steep climb in my life. It was actually pretty cool.
Yep. No, O'Hare used to be the busiest airport, but like I said, George's Atlanta Hartsfield overtook it, I think, about 10 years ago, and is now the busiest in the country.
Okay. Very cool.
But anyway, we have digressed mightily.
Way far.
Anyway, this is, by the way, episode number 150. It's our sesquicentennial episode. So, yay! We've done 150 Woo-hoo! Of these things.
I've been in 47 of them.
That's right. And if people have not already forgotten when we started this episode or this podcast back when Richard set it up originally, it was in October of 2008. It seems like a long time ago that we started.
That is a long time ago.
Yeah.
It was Richard who started it?
Yep.
I thought it was you.
No, it wasn't me. It was Richard. Richard invited me, or Richard, I think, put out a call and said, I need a co-host, and I answered that call.
So were you there at episode one? I can't remember.
Yes. Yes, I sure was. I've been here since the first episode, but it was his baby at the beginning. It really was. Okay. So.
I miss Richard.
I miss him too. I actually invited him to come on the show tonight, and I thought he was going to be here, but he said he had too much going on. So, and his podcasting gear is apparently in some state of disarray or absence, or a combination of the two. So, unfortunately, he could not be here, and that is sad. But maybe he can be here for 151. We'll see what we can do.
Maybe.
Good luck with that.
Or maybe there will be no 151.
He'll always be welcome.
I don't think that. Maybe there won't be a 151. Maybe there'll just be a movie podcast in the place of this.
We're just going to skip over 151 and go right to 152.
No, I think we'll just go to episode one of Movies from My House.
Movies in the Ham Shack.
Something like that. So. All right. Anyway, so with all of that, and since we've, talked way too long about stuff that doesn't matter to anybody. We should come back around to everyone's favorite segment. Don't look at me that way. You know it is. Cheryl's Recipe Corner.
Whatever.
And so now you can talk for a little while since we've been rattling on about nothing that means anything.
Yeah,
wait
movies.
A minute. Before you start, didn't you do this already?
Do what?
Have I done this one?
The recipe.
Yeah, I haven't done it lately, but I've done it in the past.
No. I mean, I'm not saying if you made it.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't actually, we talk about this?
We did talk about this, and it was only like 3 episodes ago. You're going to bring it up again?
Oh now she's on the spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am on the spot. So, yeah.
Quick.
Trust me. Last week when I was putting the podcast together, I looked at the Etherpad at like 4:45, and there was nothing in the Etherpad, and I needed to run errands.
You don't need to panic. It's always like that.
No. So I was like scrambling, trying to get, content in the Etherpad, and told Russ, look, I got to go. I got to go run these errands, because he had been told at like 4:45 he had to be at work the next morning. So, and he has to leave here about 4:00 in the morning in order to get to work. And I was like, well, since you're not going to be able to go with me to go run errands tomorrow, I got to go do it now, and I was just like, this looks like a good recipe, and threw it in there. And I was like, and I kept going, I think I've done this. I think I've done this.
You
probably have done this. So yeah. And I didn't have a chance to go back through the Etherpads and check and see. So yep. See, no recipe tonight. Yay.
Well, I can come up with one.
We can probably come up with, how about a drink recipe? Let's do,
okay. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's a festive occasion. Let's do that.
I mean,
our favorite drinks.
For the show that we had, or for the karaoke under the stars that we did a couple of nights ago, for the 4th of July, I made a gallon of Long Island iced teas.
Oh,
there's none love left. Long
yeah.
None left.
There's none left.
So did you spend like $1,000 on booze? It's all booze in Long Island.
It is pretty much all booze on Long Island. But the best thing about the Long Island is, here's the recipe, and I'll just give it out the way I made it. I put 5 clear liquors in Long Island iced teas. Equal parts tequila, rum, gin,
vodka,
and triple sec. Equal parts of that. And then basically enough sour mix or a combination of sour mix and Sprite so you don't pass out from the fumes. And then a little bit of cola. It can be Coke or Coke Zero. I actually use Coke Zero just to make what turns out to originally look like piss look like iced tea. And then when it looks like, you know, it's got that sort of brownish tan color so that it actually looks like iced tea, then you know it's done. What I actually wound up with is I did 500 milliliters of all the liquors. So we had ultimately 2.5 liters of liquor. And then I did most of the rest of the bottle with the sour mix and one can of soda. And that came out to basically a perfect Long Island iced tea mix, and everyone enjoyed the hell out of it. So,
excellent.
Yeah, we actually have a friend that's a bartender that was here for the party, and he's like, you people should put Sprite in it, which I've had his Long Islands with Sprite, because sour mix can be a little bitter to me.
Yeah, Sprite would make it more sweet,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, the Sprite helps cut back on the bitterness of the sour mix, but it still gives you the citrusy flavor you need. So,
right. I think you just throw lemons in there.
That's true. You could throw lemons in there. I mean, you it's basically, as far as the sweet and sour mix and the Sprite, it's just to taste. Mm-hmm. And the cola doesn't actually add anything to the drink. It's color. Strictly there for color.
It's the color, yeah, for sure.
So, but there you go.
Excellent. Sounds good.
Long Island iced teas. Go make a gallon. Share with your friends.
On a hot summer day, sitting in the sun.
Right. And then for those of you who didn't catch the actual amounts in that, I started with 2.5 liters of alcohol. And for those who are, you know, understand how liquor is bottled, a standard bottle of liquor has 750 milliliters in it. So two of those bottles is a liter and a half. I had more than three bottles in my Long Island iced teas before I started putting in mixer. So the
bad thing about our party for the 4th of July, it started at 7 p.m.
It ended at 5 a.m.
Yeah, we finally got the last of the people out of here at 5 a.m.
Excellent. Did you guys have fireworks in the barn?
We had, well, they weren't in the barn, but they were near the barn.
Yeah, we actually, because, you know, there's no air conditioning or heat in the barn where we have the concerts.
Well, who has air conditioning in a barn?
Well, the thing is, we use it purely for
we had
concerts.
Nature's air conditioning. There was wind blowing through.
Just open the barn doors.
Right. Yeah. So I told Russ, I was like, you know, we should move all the karaoke stuff outside. That way, if people want to sing the Star Spangled Banner during fireworks, you know, knock themselves out. He's like, yeah, we can do that. And by golly, we did. And people were all over that all night long. Yeah, in fact,
not only the Star Spangled Banner, I hope.
Yeah. No, we did a little bit of everything.
Yeah, we had karaoke going on forever and ever and ever.
Yeah. So.
Were you dressed like in that video, Russ?
No. What video?
That video.
What video?
The video of him doing the...
Carly Rae Jepsen?
I can't remember what tune it was.
Yeah. Where he had like ponytails. Yeah, no.
I didn't do the Carly Rae Jepsen thing. That's on YouTube once. That's enough.
Well, there you go.
It was awesome.
Or Facebook. Facebook. Yeah, whatever. So if somebody wants to see me with my... what's that thing where you take your shirt and you tie it up in a knot?
That's exactly it.
Yeah, but what do you call that? Is that?
I don't know. Daisy Duke type thing.
Right, yeah, kind of Daisy Dukes and my hair up and pigtails and stuff, doing Carly Rae Jepsen's Call Me Maybe. It's out there. It's on the internet, which means it's never going away.
Never. Ever.
All right.
The thing about our party, though, is one of the friend that suggested the Sprite and the Long Islands, he started singing, like, the national anthem or something, so we gained people from across the road. They wandered over.
Oh, yeah, people who are shooting off fireworks across the street were, like, cheering and everything, and then one of our neighbors wandered over. So I was like, hey, that's pretty cool.
Excellent.
Yeah, excellent.
Nothing like a national holiday to bring people together.
Well, yeah.
No, we had a good time.
Cool.
All right, so that's our drink recipe for the week, the Cheryl's Recipe Corner, in a nutshell. It's actually my recipe corner, but, you know.
You always hijack my recipes.
I don't hijack your recipes.
You hijack my recipe videos.
We've done one. Please, I mean. All right.
Whatever.
All right. So our social media roundup. Let's get through it. Come on.
Okay. This week, for donations and subscriptions, we have Jonas Rulo, John Spriggs, and Steven Sanner, which is a new member. Join us for yearly. And Steve Conklin and Jeremy Hall and Scott Pettigrew. Sorry, Scott. We're monthly. Yay.
Scott was actually in the chat room earlier, but his wife called him away, so he had to go.
He always leaves us.
He's a wise man.
For Facebook, Mike Wazlowski. I hope I pronounced that right.
Mike Wazlowski.
Yeah.
Mike Wazlowski.
Edgar Graham, Phil Fimiani.
Fimiani? Yeah, sure, maybe. Why not?
Somlak Wanyo, excuse me. Andrew Gaglardio.
Somlak Wanyo? Keep that in your pants, man.
Yeah. Steve Sanner, Dale Handy, and Aslam AV joined us on Facebook. I really need to put my glasses on. Mike Karen for Rafa Jazuzi.
Jazuzi?
Yeah, I'm
Jazuzi.
Yeah, something like that.
Jizuizi.
There you go.
Something like that, yeah.
Andy Long and Faux Time Podcast join us on Google Plus.
Oh, I like the first one. Just so I need to jump in here. On the Twitter feed, we our first guy is at Miguel Lobos, which I think is awesome because the guy's name is Mike Wolf. So his Twitter handle is at Miguel _ Lobos, which is cool. Everyone should do that.
Okay. Well, so go ahead and do Twitter then.
Okay. We also have HV Palomo. Una Paloma Blanca. Something like that. Anyway. We also have Whiskey 1 Sierra Alpha Whiskey, W1SAW, and we have Kilo Charlie 3 Charlie Tango Tango, KC3CTT. And I could have sworn KC3CTT had been a long time Twitter follower, but apparently not. He just showed up as a recent addition. So anyway, welcome or welcome back, whichever it actually
Whatever
is.
Whatever it is, yes. And YouTube is Rick Troth.
Yes, we have a new YouTube follower.
Yay!
We probably need to put some other Something stuff up on YouTube. Yeah.
Nobody joined the mailing list. Nobody bought anything. So.
Well, that's okay. No one bought anything this time, but someone did buy something last time. As you'll all recall, we had someone actually buy something. So very, very cool.
Yes, and I don't know if you actually...
I didn't mention it, but we do need to mention that the Printfection store is apparently going away because Printfection, they're fucktards. And they...
Oh, hey.
What?
They won't
that's not nice.
That's not the first time the F-bomb has come out tonight. So
no, that's not nice.
No, they basically pulled their user storefronts.
Yeah.
So printfection.com.
Why did they do that?
Because apparently it wasn't a sustainable model anymore. So they...
Well, yeah,
they had
them.
They had stopped letting people...
Closing because they weren't making money. What kind of business are they?
Right, yeah.
Business kind of business.
They had stopped letting people create new storefronts. They stopped
for
that
some
like
time,
a year
right.
ago or 2 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yep. So...
I did not know that.
They basically went into bulk orders instead of doing one-off orders, you know, single order type stuff. And they basically just... Now they've fully closed down their storefronts, so...
Well, didn't they? Basically, they just like would let you... throw your shit on there and they take a percentage, right?
Right. Same thing.
Just like, everybody just is trying to sell crap.
Right, just what Cafe Press is doing. But Cafe Press is actually still doing it. Printfection decided that they couldn't sustain that model anymore, so they quit it.
The bad thing is, Printfection had shirts up to like 6X or something.
Cafe Press
stops at 3.
Right.
So, which is why we went with Printfection since Russ and I are both fat. So.
Well, ultimately,
it's just more to love.
Right. Ultimately, we may just start doing things where we actually just order a bunch of stuff and sell it ourselves, because we can probably do it actually cheaper that way than doing it the one-offs Cafe Press and stuff. So that's ultimately where we'll probably wind up with that. But for the moment, you can still go to cafepress.com/LHS podcast, but our Printfection store is, of course, now gone. So unfortunately, that's what it is.
Yeah, actually, we need to do that since we know that the printing company in Springfield has shirts up to...
Yeah, like however big we want to get them.
So.
What well, it is, what it was, what it shall be.
What it is, what it...
What?
Sorry. No. Flashbacks again.
Flashbacks to Robin Williams.
Oh, yeah. That's how my mind works.
Yep. Oh, I watch Good Morning Vietnam about once every 2 or 3 months just because it's such a great film.
Just because it's awesome.
Yeah.
And I've never seen it.
Loosely based on a true story.
Right.
Have you ever listened to the actual DJ that he's...
Adrian Cronauer? No,
yeah. I haven't. Okay, like totally different. Like not anywhere the same. Like,
well, no, because, I mean, that was basically... The thing that was nice about Good Morning Vietnam, it was actually a well-constructed film that was also a showcase for Robin Williams' stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. It properly integrated the two of them. Some of the movies...
still a great film.
Yes, no, absolutely. Because the drama and everything was still there, but it also allowed Robin Williams to be Robin Williams.
Well, I was told that he... ad-libbed like
most of it,
pretty
yep.
much all of what he did. So that's pretty
well. That's pretty much how he operates, or operated, I should say.
Well, so. Yeah, indeed. One of my all-time favorite movies, and I was just telling a friend recently that it's one of those that I have to see again because it's been a long time since I've seen it.
Yeah, Cheryl actually got waved at one night by Robin Williams.
Really?
Yeah.
That guy.
He was in an alley walking into a venue in Chicago that we had just left, and saw us sitting out in the alleyway, and he waved at her. So
cool.
Yeah. Yep. We had actually been at the venue in downtown Chicago seeing Jonathan Colton and Paul and Storm, which were, you know, they're all friends of ours, and their show ran long. And of course, they are rushing to get them out of the building because whoever was going on stage after them, Ellen DeGeneres and Robin Williams were in town.
I thought it was Whoopi.
Mm-mm.
No, it was Ellen. Whoopi
was there too, I think.
Okay.
But anyway, there were several, you know, stars in town coming to that show because they were doing something in Chicago the next morning. And I was standing in the alley while Russ, I think, was helping, you know, Jonathan and everybody get their stuff carried out of the building. And Robin's like, you know, hey, as he and waves and walks in. I was like, ah! Wow, that was Robin Williams. So, cool.
Yep, a brush with fame.
Or something.
Yep. So. All right, guys, I think that's it. That's 150 of these things. We're done with it.
And how exciting it was.
It was.
As always.
Thrilling. And hopefully my little soundboard thing here will actually work so I can... do the thing that I need to do.
Yeah, we'll see here in a second.
All right, so let me push the button, and I hear nothing. There it is. Look at that. How about that? Well, thanks, everybody, for listening to episode number 150 of Linux in the Ham Shack. Everybody say, yeah.
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 Please check out our website at http://lhspodcast.info. You can become an ambassador for the show. We recently had Daryl as an ambassador out at the Southeast Linux Fest, and he will be an ambassador again at the Roanoke Hamfest coming up in August. If you want more information about that, check out our website or email ambassadors@lhspodcast.info. You can email info@lhspodcast.info. If you want to just make a general comment for the show, or you can call us at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. We would love to hear your voicemail comments. Our IRC channel is #LHSPodcast on the Freenode network. You can subscribe to our mailing list. You can buy merchandise from us, which helps support the show, at cafepress.com/LHS podcast. You can also help the show by clicking on the sponsored ads in the right-hand column of the homepage. That doesn't cost you anything, just a moment of your time, and it sends a few cents our way to help keep the thing going. You can listen to us live every other Monday night at 8 o'clock Central Time. That's 0200 early in the morning on Tuesdays. Our recording schedule and countdown timer, information about the show, where you can email us, where you can talk to us, where you can leave us feedback, and where you can connect with us on our chat room is all on the website, lhspodcast.info. Thanks to all of our listeners who are live with us tonight, who are quasi-live, those who listen to us past, present, and those people who haven't listened to us yet. We appreciate each and every one of you. So live with Cheryl from Studio 3D in Southwest Missouri.
Good night, everybody.
And with Pete up in Montreal, Canada, B2XPL.
Bonsoir.
We will all be back in a couple of weeks to do it all again. See you later, folks. More fun than shooting guns in the house.
Nice try.
You really got to work on that.
I'm sorry, I can never be Richard.
No, you cannot be Richard.
Nobody can be Richard.